Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
Ramon, four hits in 15 at-bats against Kikuchi. But three of those four hits have been home runs. That ball hit pretty well to left. We mentioned Urias only hits home runs against Kikuchi. He's done it again. Ramon Urias, five career hits against Yusei, and four of them have been home runs. Number two is an Astro, makes it 1-0. Altuve bids for a two-run home run. It's gone! Jose Altuve gives the Astros a five-run lead. It's now 8-3.
Ben, give this man a ding. Give him a ding right now. Seth Payne, he called it. And that was just part of the deluge. That was only three of the eight runs from yesterday.
I called it.
You called
it. Dang
it.
You called my shot.
You called it. As I was sitting here spewing stats of futility offensively for the Astros over the weekend.
Yeah.
11 of their last 18 games. That wasn't even the weekend. That's been the month. 11 of their last 18 games, two or fewer runs. The Angels and the Rockies, two of the worst pitching teams in the sport, and they're putting together 12 runs in six games against two of the worst pitching teams. And Seth Payne had the courage to stand on his podium yesterday, to get up on his soapbox and say, there will be a deluge today, Sean.
Yes, it was.
And a deluge there was.
Part of it was, Sean, frankly, yeah, they were 5-for-42 on this homestand with runners in scoring position, which is a bad stat.
Yeah.
And yet, they were getting runners in scoring position. So unless you think the team is full of a bunch of yellow-bellied cowards who shrink in the moment, maybe there's a little bit, at some point the floodgates were going to open. Oh. It was nice to see them do it versus that treacherous Kikuchi and him fleeing the opportunity for greatness, chasing cash.
Yep.
Like these modern professional athletes. I have no animosity in my heart for Kikuchi.
And collegiate athletes.
Yeah. No, I have no animosity for Kikuchi. I didn't realize that Correa had entered the game 12-for-24 in his career against Kikuchi. And I didn't know that Urias.
I had no idea until you just said it.
Yeah. Urias was, as Callis mentioned. Yeah. What he said, he only hits home runs.
He has four hits. Going into that at-bat, he had four hits against Kikuchi. Three of them were home runs, and then he hits another home run. So he's got four now.
And seven strikeouts. He was all or nothing versus Kikuchi, but he hits a home run and a double yesterday, plus another strikeout. So he kind of kept in line with what he's done with against Kikuchi in the past.
Yeah.
And then that was Jose Altuve's home run was the third or fourth hardest hit he's had in the StatCast era.
Wow. Because he hit a double pretty hard yesterday, too.
Yeah,
he
maybe was on the double was. One of those two was the hardest hit.
Yeah. The double was a rope, man. Like, he smoked that thing down the line. Either way, Altuve, good yesterday. Yeah, and he boinked the home run off the foul pole. So everybody got Chick-fil-A, I guess, right? Is that?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so there was that. It was a really
good
day.
And the Angels almost hit that the one just off that one in the... Oh, it was late in the game, right? I went just shy of the Chick-fil-A sign there to left, and it was a foul ball.
Oh, yeah, it hit like the little corner right there near the base of the wall. I don't know if
Chick-fil-A
you get...
Chick-fil-A got a lot of free publicity.
They're
paying for it, but, you know, yesterday they got a lot of publicity.
I don't know. Do opponent home runs? I don't think we get fed with opponent home runs.
No. I was just thinking about notable things that happened at that foul pole.
I'm just thinking about getting fed. I just want Chick-fil-A right now.
That would be the dumbest promotion ever, yeah. I guess it would be like a consolation Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. So how you feeling today, man? How you doing?
I feel good.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm sorry if you can't tell by the tone of my voice. I was pretty excited about the Astros winning yesterday.
Yeah. We came in with a little baseball. I'm just checking on you. See how you're doing. You doing good?
Why are you asking how I feel? What's going on? Do I look bad?
No, you look great, actually. A nice white long-sleeve tee really accentuates things. No, you're doing good. Doing good.
I feel like my bubbly demeanor should have told you everything that you need to know.
I'm
my
checking goodness. And seeing how you're doing. And
It kind of caught me yesterday because it's always so weird with Labor Day being the first day of the work week before the NFL begins.
Yeah.
Because it feels, I, I, It feels like there's a false start or something, you know, like in a race, not a Laramie Tunsil type of false start, yeah. Where like everybody's lined up, you're ready to go. Hey, we got football this week. Oh, no. It's Labor Day. Wait until tomorrow. Most people aren't going to be really checking in until Tuesday this week.
Yeah, that's okay.
Go die, people who set the dates of national holidays. This is the first week of the NFL season is the most glorious national holiday of them all.
I go back and forth on the break. It feels like a really long break from the end of the preseason to the start of the season. But yeah. I love the way the college football schedule laid out this weekend. You know, like that was fun. You had Coach Prime on Friday. You had the full day on Saturday. You had Arch Manning in the morning, and you had Clemson and LSU at night, and then you had Notre Dame and Miami on Sunday, and then we had Belichick getting his ass kicked last night. If you're a hater, this was a really fun 4 days because you got Coach Prime losing on Friday, you got Arch Manning getting destroyed on Saturday. Destroyed. I mean, they lost by 7, but he looked horrible. There are a lot of Notre Dame haters out there. That was a good night for you on Sunday. And then last night, I would imagine Belichick has a lot. This was a haters weekend.
There was
something for every hater this weekend, every day.
Upset. And you know what? A lot of the upsets weren't like flukish upsets. The Florida State beating Alabama was an upset, but it's more of a story about, wow, Alabama, how far have you fallen? And with Belichick, I told you yesterday that I'm kind of starting to pull for Belichick. I guess maybe the same way I was starting to pull
for you.
Shedeur Sanders. And once the tide of public opinion shifts so drastically, you're like, yeah. All right, enough is enough. Yeah. Okay, that's bad. I'm already there with Arch Manning. I'm like, all right, enough is enough. Let's sit back and wait a little bit. Okay. But with Bill Belichick, for him to get destroyed as a defensive genius and what have you, would this be the same if Belichick keeps this up? If they just remain horrendous? And credit to TCU, hell of a performance. Would this be without probably any kind of a grinding at a restaurant type of scenario? Would this be kind of the mirror image of Urban Meyer failing in the NFL?
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, it's a little bit different in that, I mean, taking over the job at UNC is obviously going to be a bigger challenge than Patricia going in and being the defensive coordinator at Ohio State.
Yeah.
That's like, but right now, Patricia is a much better college defensive coordinator than Bill Belichick is.
I would say it's okay. It's an interesting analogy. I would say it'd be a perfect analogy if it turns out that the thing that undermined Belichick's ability to do well at North Carolina had something to do with something off the field. Like if it was a Jordan Hudson situation, if that relationship revealed all sorts of dirt and grime and innuendo and whatnot. Because I think what ultimately undid Urban Meyer at the NFL level, yes, was a failure to adapt to the NFL, but he also had all the off of the field stuff that it was a bleep show. He was done after 13 games.
The off the field stuff was kind of related to the on field stuff, though, in that it sounded like Urban Meyer genuinely didn't understand the commitment that it takes to be an NFL coach.
Yeah,
in terms of actual time spent thinking about football.
And we don't know anything about Belichick behind the scenes and how much he's investing into North Carolina yet. You know,
yeah, like, what if you found out that Belichick really was like all of a sudden for the first time in his life really enjoying life let's kick off early today. You can leave the office at 2 p.m.
Right.
Jordan and I want to go take a tour of the coast.
All these mic'd up videos they're doing are really just a front because he only puts in like 3 hours a day. He's total absentee coach. So we don't know anything about that. They looked like a team last night that had an absentee head coach. They got killed last night.
He could get through this season. If he goes through this season and just is competitive, I don't think it's a huge flaming disaster because he is at UNC after all.
Yeah.
But if he has more games like this, that's an abject failure.
Yes.
Man.
So that was last night. That was fun. Hey, we skipped right over it with the Astros, and we should mention it. Luis Garcia was a huge story. We got so caught up in the deluge of runs, rightfully so.
Well, then you being concerned about my welfare.
That's how you were doing. Why are you so fixated on this?
Yeah, Luis Garcia, my favorite, I think maybe one of my favorite moments of this sports year was how happy Luis Garcia looked to be having his hands and glove checked at the end of innings.
Yeah.
For foreign objects and what have you. Remember when they introduced that a couple years ago? Seemed like half the pitchers in the league were acting like they were unfairly accused of a crime or something.
Mm-hmm.
Which made you a little bit suspicious. And Luis Garcia couldn't have been happier to be talking to the ump.
Yes!
And just exchanging pleasantries and all of that. And
little things, man.
Yeah. And after the longest rehab assignment of all of these returning guys, well, I don't count Lance because I don't even know what I can't keep
track
of.
Yeah, I don't group him with these guys.
Yeah.
I don't group him.
Of the three main guys, Arrigetti and Javier. You know, you come in braced for the worst because Javier and Arrigetti struggled so badly. And other than the fourth inning, where he allowed his only three hits in a span of four batters, and they were really hard hits, and it was kind of scary in the fourth inning, that's it. He lets up three hits, three runs in six innings, gives you a quality start in his return, and even without his velocity being what it was just a great, I don't want to say a great performance, but given the circumstances, very, very promising. Raising or lowering the bar because of his injury. That was a great performance.
It's a good enough performance to where you can look at the offense and say, okay, do your job. Like, he kept them in the game. Like, you give up, you come back after 2 years of not pitching and you give up three runs in six innings and you're going against the Angels. That's a good enough performance to look at the offense and say, do your job. And the offense did their job yesterday. Spencer Arrigetti, Christian Javier, Luis Garcia combined in this series. They all pitched in this series. Combined 18 and a third innings, four hits, four runs, eight walks, 20 strikeouts. And that was the encouraging thing with Luis Garcia, Seth, compared to the other two guys, and certainly compared to Lance, was no walks. Like, he no walks, six strikeouts. So the control was there for Luis Garcia yesterday.
And then when it came time to put down Trout at the very end of his outing, and he throws a changeup, which he does not throw all that often at all. I mean, he hasn't thrown any pitches all that often at all the last 2 years. But Trout had tagged him for a home run the last time he tried that, with throwing a changeup to him. So that's exciting. That's now I'm allowing myself to get really excited about this potential pitching staff going into the playoffs.
I am too.
Especially given Jason Alexander and you know, whatever he ends up being in the playoffs.
That's six guys now. Have you added to the two aces at the top? And that's, and Dana Brown can breathe a little bit of a sigh of relief for now, that because this was the strategy. We're not going to overpay for pitching because we got all these guys coming back. And at least in this series, that strategy looked really, really good. The Angels got four runs on all three of these guys combined, and they were all on home runs. You know, they weren't stringing innings together against them with hit after hit and then a walk and a hit. It was, we made a bad pitch. It's a home run, and you flush it, and you live to fight another day. So, all right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We got a lot to get to. Quick update that we'll get to right out of the chute, injury-wise, for the Texans. That's really good. We can add another name to the people who are with us in the national media. You're with us or you're against us. We have a whiff that we're adding to the list. We have hot depth chart takes. The depth chart is out, and we're going to have hot takes on it. We'll do that coming up next. Payne and Pendergast. Hey, programming note, Nick Caserio, Texans Executive Vice President and GM, will join us tomorrow to help preview the upcoming season. He'll join us at 7:30 tomorrow on the show. D'Amico Ryans met with the media yesterday, and first question out of the chute, hey, what's the latest on C.J. Gardner-Johnson?
Yeah, C.J. is doing really well, progressing fine. We expect him to be ready for week one.
All right, there you go. We got an injury update with a definitive time frame, an update on how the player is doing, and we expect to see him on Sunday.
Yeah, that was
how hard was that?
Well, it's easy when you're going to say the.
I'm just joking. Kidding.
I know. You're joking. I do. The more I think about all the people getting up in arms about Joe Mixon or honestly Kyle Tucker or Yordan Alvarez or anything, it really is, Sean. I think when people get upset about the team not giving information, it's because people are going to be upset no matter what when somebody is injured and they're not playing. They're like, we as fans are like petulant children. There's no answer that's going to be satisfactory. If the Texans gave you an in-depth update on exactly what's going on with Joe Mixon, immediately it becomes, I can't believe they're handling it this way medically. These idiots, how did they not know that it was going to be a problem? Same way it was with the Astros. There's no information at all. People are agitated. Then they get information, and you're going to blame the medical staff. So the team's going to get criticism no matter what. I feel like just playing it close to the vest, aside from, you know, they'll say that they're protecting the players and everything. great. Go hug a sleeping pillow or something. It's just, they're damned if they do and damned if they don't. Yeah. So playing it close to the vest is probably the right strategy. It's just that people are always going to be upset about it.
So CJ Gardner-Johnson plays on Sunday. That's big. They need him on Sunday.
Huge.
Yeah.
That's really, really big.
Yeah.
CJ Gardner-Johnson's injury kind of was a reminder that, okay, as good as the secondary is and looks on paper, man, there's just not a lot of depth that you feel great about right now. And that's, I think, the thing to monitor all season long, obviously, is A, you know, there's still a chance that they make a move for depth in the secondary at some point. And B, they just simply have to stay healthy. They're not allowed to get injured. CJ Gardner-Johnson's injury was the last allowed injury.
He's probably chomping at the bit too, because he didn't get to participate in either of the joint practices.
Yeah.
Which he loves those. You know, we know from that interview that he did. He loves the joint practices, and he didn't get a chance to, you know, I would imagine he'd have played a couple of series in at least one of the games. Like, he's probably ready to go hit somebody, I would imagine.
The only thing I'd worry about is that he's just champing at the bit so much that he ends up with a penalty or 15, something.
He's ready to go get a 15-yard penalty, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I know he's matured a lot. He's talked about how he has to learn when to dial it back and when not to go all in and not be full C.J. Gardner-Johnson. But it's hard. That first time out. Last time he played football, he was winning a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And then he has to just sit back. He gets shuttled off to Houston, and now he's going to be wanting to prove himself.
It is pretty. I mean, you and I were both there when this injury happened. There weren't that many people that put eyes on this injury, because it happened at the last day at the Greenbrier. If someone had told you just the scene that you and I were witnessing that day, that guy would be back for week one, I would have been like, no.
I know. It was very, very quiet. Part of it because it was, you know, there were no fans there or anything, and it was just such
It was super quiet,
there,
yeah.
You're out there in that rural setting out there. It feels like a high school practice in a lot of ways.
Yep.
And that everything was just so quiet.
Yep.
And then you had the erroneous report that he tore his ACL, which made sense. Like, given the circumstances, it seemed like, oh, okay, I'm not surprised that he reportedly tore his ACL.
No, the way he was getting helped off the cart and helped into the building, it looked like a really severe injury. So this is great news.
There is a little bit of, like, I honestly know this is callous and I'm a jerk for this and all that, but it used to be the only time people really just stopped practice even was if it was a spinal injury or something, you know, and other than that, it was kind of it's an orthopedic issue. We'll find out later how he did. Let's go.
It sounds to me you would have been more satisfied if they just kept playing and stepping over him while he was out on the field.
You know, Nick Saban got all that guff for stepping over the injured player. I was kind of like, I don't know, maybe I was just raised up in a different football environment. I was kind of like, well, what'd you expect him to do?
I think that's it.
You had to get over to a drill.
You were raised in a different football. You're not a jerk. This is what you were brought up in. Can't blame you.
Yeah.
This is nature versus nurture.
There's work to be done.
Yeah. It's about the work.
Does the injured guy on the field need to make it all about him? There's 52 other guys out there that are trying to win a football game.
Scrape him up and get him out of here. We got work to do.
If it's not a spinal, then just let's get going.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I love that. All right, are you with us or are you against us? That's the question I have to all these national people. So far, best I can tell, Orlovsky, definitely with the Texans, and C.J. Stroud. Albert Breer, 100% on the Texans bandwagon.
Is he?
Yes, it would appear, from what he says publicly at least. I trust Albert Breer.
I don't pay attention to him much unless he just comes across my...
I only pay attention to him when he's on our side, and he's on our side right now.
Okay.
Phil Simms. What was this from, Seth? What was
this?
Phil
was from the Believe in Giants podcast, and somebody sent it to me yesterday. This is Phil Simms when asked by Carl Banks, another Giants great.
Giants great linebacker.
About whether C.J. Stroud needs to have a bounce back here.
O-line was average. Pass protection scheme was awful. Everybody knew by the formations and everything what they were what to do against their offensive line and the system. And that's why it just fell apart. Man, Houston, you know, their defense is so fast, it's scary. Secondary is really good. And we'll see how the offensive line, they got to fit. You know, quarterbacks that don't get time to throw are not going to play great.
Yeah. The very obvious statement there at the end. But it's I think sometimes we hesitate to just make it that simple. And yet, everything you said at the beginning was true last year, that teams were starting to really, especially in the first half of the season, had a really good beat on how the Texans were going to pass protect, what Bobby Slowick was going to do. The play calling became, I think by virtue of, I know people always claim that the play calling is more predictable than it is. I try to be careful about that, except that it was clear to me that there were defenses that were dialed into exactly what was coming frequently or had a really good feel for the tendencies. And all of those things are true. It's, you know, it's sometimes too easy to just point to the offensive coordinator and make him the boogeyman that was responsible for everything. But Bobby Slowick is responsible for a lot of it. The thing that I kind of chuckled at when Sim started off was he said the O-line was average. And I'm like, oh, boy, that's an understatement. But then he basically was saying that, no, the O-line was average. The scheme was really bad.
Oh, yeah.
And you got the absolute worst out of that offensive line because of it.
Yep. So Sims on our side. We like for purposes of 2025, we like Phil Sims.
He likes the defense, and he likes, or at least he's making some excuses for CJ Lett.
Are you
justifiable excuses?
Are you more excited to watch this defense on Sunday, or excited to see what the newfangled offense looks like?
I'm excited to watch the defense. I've got nervous anticipation about watching the offense.
That's a better way to put it. I'm intrigued by the offense. I'm excited about the defense. Yeah.
That's Joe Mixon would make me feel a hell of a lot better. I feel better about Nick Chubb right now than I did at the beginning of training camp.
Yeah.
But again, just don't watch any Joe Mixon highlights this week, everybody. Don't do it to yourself, because I did it and I wish I hadn't, because he just, that's a different caliber of athlete than you're seeing out of any of the running backs right now, including Woody Marks, just because of the size difference. Woody Marks is the guy that I'm most excited about. And I think maybe the rookie on the team that's the least talked about nationally, but that might have the biggest impact in the first few games, at least at the skill level positions or on the defensive side of the ball. Arianti Arisuri is the other. Arianti Arisuri will have a huge impact on the game just by virtue of him at least having a plan to start every snap in week one.
Yeah, being out
but
there.
But Woody Marks might be the most eye-popping one.
Yeah, that's I love Woody Marks. I've loved how he's looked throughout training camp. You know what's Seth, this may not cure your Mixon anxiety, but maybe it'll serve as like an Advil or something like that. I walked into my local watering hole yesterday afternoon, and ESPN was on the TV, and they were talking fantasy, and they showed all five of Nick Chubb's carries in the Carolina game. And I was like, oh, yeah, that looks pretty good. You know, those five carries. Now, it's the only five carries he got against another NFL team all preseason, but that's what Advil is. It'll cure me for a couple
worst
of hours.
The worst rushing defense in the league last year.
I wasn't saying that. I'm going, look at Nick Chubb. Yeah.
It was the nice thing about Nick Chubb's performance in the preseason game was that it was a really steady 5 yards per carry.
That's what I thought too. Yeah.
I think his shortest run was 2 yards. He had another short run that was for a first down.
Yeah.
So that doesn't even, I don't worry about that. If you're getting if it's 2.5 or 3 yards, but you get a first down,
it's
that's
successful
what really
play. Yeah. It's a successful play.
But he had 5 carries for 25 yards and without a huge breakout run, but also with no negative runs.
Yeah. The
Texans
long
last year were the third worst in terms of run stuffs.
Yeah.
When they got stuffed at the line of scrimmage or behind the line of scrimmage. I don't think that's going to be as big of an issue this
year. Okay, so you love you some Woody Marks. I love me some Woody Marks. Why the hell is he fourth on the depth chart then right now? The
unofficial depth chart.
It's out, yeah. It says unofficial at the top. It's the unofficial depth chart, but he's fourth on the – he's fourth. And this is not a rookie punishment trend, because Jaden Higgins and Arianti Arisuri are both first string with the squad now.
Will Kunkel had tweeted this out, and his question was something along the lines of thoughts.
Yeah.
Asking for thoughts. I would say the three most common replies from the people who replied to his post were disgruntled that Woody Marks was fourth instead of second. They didn't feel like Damian Pierce had earned being second, whatever. I don't think, when it comes to the running backs, this is going to be genuinely running back by committee. And I think there's a really good chance that Woody Marks ends up having the most touches per game over these first three games, when you include receptions.
He will be the second running back to touch the football for the Texans in this game on Sunday. I feel strongly about that. Nick Chubb will be first, and Woody Marks will be second. I feel strongly about that.
The second most common observation or thought about this unofficial depth chart was surprise or just eyebrows raised that Higgins was starting over Hutchinson.
Yep.
I think because Hutchinson had a very productive preseason, and Higgins had some nice plays, but it just seemed like you were hearing and seeing Hutchinson more and more. I'm curious about this. I wonder how exactly it'll all play out, because this is the unofficial depth chart.
Yeah.
I feel like Hutchinson, he just might be in line to be that latest example of a guy that looks really good during training camp, but ultimately he's kind of capped by his actual physical skill set.
Yeah.
With Jaden Higgins has a really exciting upside.
Yeah, he's freaky. Jaden Higgins is freaky.
Yeah. Like, where can we get yardage and chunks and who can break tackles and do all those things? I think they still look at Jaden Higgins as the guy that
I think they both factor in probably almost equally at this point, you know. But
The third most common reply was some comment about the depth in the secondary being some word that I can't say because of the damned FAA, the jackbooted thugs at the FAA, or the not the FAA, the FCC.
FCC, yep. Yeah.
The FAA I've got my own set of issues with.
I knew the FAA would end up taking
unjustly
some.
Flagged at security.
So people just don't like the guys that are backups in the secondary right now?
Well, yeah. I mean, you and I have already mentioned that we don't like the guys.
Yeah,
that's the backup. We don't feel awesome about the depth in the secondary.
Right. Yeah, Tremont Smith, Jalen Smith. I like Jalen. I know Jalen Smith. He's a rookie. I thought Jalen Smith was fine. And MJ Stewart is a journeyman. I'm surprised there's still only 8 defensive backs on the team. I thought they might have made a move back there. They did bring D'Angelo Ross back on the practice squad, and they can elevate 2 guys on game day. So if I had to guess, Seth, that just based on depth of position, they've only got 2 tight ends. They've only got 8 defensive backs. If I had to guess on game day, if they're bringing 2 guys up off the practice squad, it'll be a defensive back and maybe Luke Lachey or somebody like that, you know?
You know, journeyman's kind of a generic term for a guy that's, okay, I'm like a replacement-level player or what have you.
Yeah.
But it does. Like, the name journeyman sounds like a guy who travels around a lot. It's worth noting that MJ Stewart's entering his 4th season with the Texans. You know? He's been here. You look up, and all of a sudden, he's been here a while.
Yep.
And I think there's just a trust factor with him. I don't mind MJ Stewart being part of the depth in the secondary. Yes, he's not as good as a starter, but it makes him an affordable guy that can plug into the system. I'd like to see him improve on some of the things from last year, because he, as well as some of the starters, were responsible for some of those big chunk plays.
Yeah,
it's just hoping one more year in D'Amico's system is gonna allay some of that.
I understand people maybe wanting better players than those guys. This is what depth looks like in the NFL. Like, I don't know what people are upset about. Like, it's Tremont Smith, a rookie, a third-round rookie, and MJ Stewart, who you just said, the team trusts back there. Like, you're not going to have all pros as your 5th, 6th, and 7th guys in the secondary.
I'll tell you what, if you want to look at a team that has way more things to worry about than us, it's the Buffalo Bills in their secondary.
What's going on there?
They tried to bolster it somewhat in the offseason, because, you know, their defense has been an issue in the playoffs.
Yes.
The Hairston, the rookie, he's injured. He's on the IR designated to return.
Get some off-field trouble, too.
Tre'Davious White has some kind of a lower body injury.
Oh, you don't
he's
say.
Had an ACL. He's had an ACL and an Achilles in recent years.
Yeah.
And the safety, I mean, the safeties are banged up and in question. Like, they don't even know exactly who their starting secondary is. They just signed Jordan Poyer back.
They brought
old
man Poyer back. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that.
So, it's a good point you make about, man, nobody – very, very few teams, other than maybe the Chiefs at any given time, feel really good about the depth in their secondary. The Chiefs just do an incredible job training those guys and getting the absolute best out of them. So I think maybe going into the 3rd year of this staff, they've done a really good job developing young cornerbacks. You got to hope that that's what they can do with Jalen Smith.
Yes.
And that's part of it. That, just like last year, remember, everybody was all upset about how we don't have any good safeties. We don't have any good safeties. Why didn't you go out and get Simmons or this guy or that guy? Oh, it turns out they really like Kalen Bullock. And Kalen Bullock developed, now people are really excited about him. So likewise with Jalen Smith, hopefully that defensive coaching staff continues to do a good job developing the young guys.
The last one real quick, Henry Toa still first string over Christian Harris, caught some people's eyes, but Toto has just been more reliable than Christian Harris.
Yeah, and I don't know if you like if you had watched the third preseason game, there was nothing that Christian Harris did where I thought, oh, wow, yeah, boy, that's an upgrade over Toto.
I'm totally with you, yeah.
It looked like Harris was just still getting his feet wet and trying to get back into his true form. He didn't look like the best version of Christian Harris.
100%. I agree with you on that. All right, Football Talk on Sports Radio 610 is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days. But you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Headlines up next. Astros win. We'll get you updated on the divisional race going on right now in the AL West. We've got Texans injury updates. We've got updates on things going on around the NFL and a college football game last night that if you're a hater, it was a nice night for you. We'll have that for you coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
All right, let's start with the Astros. They win yesterday 8-3. The bats finally coming alive after not just this series, but really the Rockies series was not great either. They had scored 12 runs in the previous six games. They scored 8 runs yesterday, including a home run from Jose Altuve, a home run from Ramon Urias. And the big story, Seth, was six strong innings from Luis Garcia. Six innings, 3 earned runs. The 3 earned runs all came in the fourth inning off of a couple of bombs. Other than that, like if we were just counting innings as like rounds in a boxing match, he had 5 really good innings and 1 bad inning. And thankfully, the bats did enough to pick him up, and the bullpen came in and did a nice job to close things out. Yesterday, and they pick up a game in the process. The Mariners lose to the Rays, so the Astros head into this series tonight with the Yankees coming to town. How fun is that? With a 3-game lead in the AL West. Life
this is
good.
This is probably the most promising start of any of the pitchers that have had promising performances this year. A lot of them have been the variety of a Colton Gordon or somebody along the way where they outperformed expectations for a little bit, but you just didn't know exactly what you're going to get. This one feels like everything I had hoped that I was going to see in the first performance of Arrigetti or Christian Javier,
yep,
or even Lance McCullers, which is, oh, wow. The guy, even though his velocity isn't back up to what it used to be, he seems to be just fine with it, and he looked very comfortable. And it wasn't just one inning. It was a stretch of 4 batters, you know, that he gave up those 3 runs and 3 hits over the stretch of 4 batters, but then reeled it all back in. And I think the fact that you can try to turn a weakness into a strength here, the fact that he had such a long rehab meant that he also had the longest rehab assignment. You know, as he's coming back this year, then he had a much longer rehab assignment than Javier Arrigetti, and he might just be more ready to be playing in the major leagues right
now. His performance, if I remember correctly, Javier's first game back, he went like 5 innings and change and gave up a couple of runs. But I remember being like, oh, okay. I mean, I'd have to go back and look. I'm just going off of, like, Spencer Arrigetti's return, and I know he's not a Tommy John guy, but we're putting him in the same bucket as guys they're counting on this year coming back from injury. Arrigetti's return, if I remember, that was where he gave up a bunch of runs, but they were a bunch of squib hits, and his velocity was good. He was striking guys out.
He had a little
out.
Bit of bad luck in the first
bad
one.
Luck, yeah. But he gave up like 6 runs in 3 2/3. Javier was not very impressive, but he only gave up 2 runs. And I watched all 3 of those. This was the one where I was most encouraged by in terms of the comeback start. You know, Javier looked Arrigetti and Javier both looked good over the weekend, so they're maybe rounding into form. Garcia looked, of those 3, looked the most ready to start grinding major league innings again, I thought, yesterday.
Well, and then again, too, if we talk about, okay, you've got 24 games left, whatever it is, it seems like way too small. The bats were kind of an issue in the month of August. They were one of the worst teams in baseball in the month of August. And they hit with runners in scoring position last night, finally, after being 5-for-45 during this homestand, or 5-for-43, whatever it was. That's my biggest question mark still, is just how consistent can they be? Altuve has a great day yesterday, but he was one of the guys that was an issue in the month of August. Christian Walker has looked a lot more like himself. Carlos Correa, I think it's not I don't think it's the change of scenery or being back in Houston. I think for him it's as simple as, yeah, he physically feels a lot better when he's playing third base instead of shortstop. And he's just not – he's physically fresher, and he's probably the best version of himself, because you're getting a better – You're getting a better guy at the plate in Carlos than he was earlier this season.
Oh, no doubt. I don't know. I mean, their offense was bad in August. I don't know what it would have looked like without Carlos Correa. He was actually the one guy who was good in August. I have faith it's going to be okay because of some of the names you just rattled off. You know, whereas earlier in the year you have these hitting issues, but it's like, well, you know, we really need Cooper Hummel and Taylor Trammell. And, you know, Brendan Rodgers, like they were putting lineups out there in June, Seth. And granted, they were winning somehow. But the names you just rattled off, these are names that you should be able to count on in September and October to come up with big hits. I mean, you're talking about Jeremy Pena, an all-star who's been through, he's been an MVP in the postseason before. You're talking about Yordan Alvarez, who, when he's right, is one of the best hitters in baseball. Carlos Correa, one of the most clutch hitters in October in recent history. Christian Walker has started to come back here, you know, a little, you know, he's started to, and Jose Altuve, who's a Hall of Famer. Like, these are all guys who should be able to come up. It should look like it did yesterday, where you're 6-for-15 with runners in scoring position.
You know, it's weird too. You were commenting earlier about how, or a couple weeks ago, about how, yeah, you forget that Correa and Yordan didn't actually, was it Correa? Who was it? It was Correa and, who it was, the player you
talking
about.
It was Correa and Yordan.
Hadn't actually played together that much. Yeah.
They played one full
season. As I was saying it, I was like trying to cross-check in my mind. And I'm like, wait, no, that can't possibly be. But they didn't actually spend a lot of time together. I had that thought yesterday, a more extreme and obvious version of just Kikuchi. I'm looking at, you know, Christian Walker and Arias and Correa and all of these guys who hadn't even faced Kikuchi when he was with the Astros or hadn't been played on the same team with the Astros. The turnover has been pretty damn stark over the last couple of years.
It is, and they stay competitive. It's pretty impressive.
I thought of you and smiled because when they were talking about how Garcia had shortened his throwing motion a little bit as he was coming back from injury, it kind of made me nostalgic for Urquidy and how much you liked Urquidy's tiny little arms.
His tiny little alligator arms. I miss him.
Yeah.
And how sweaty they would get. He got the sweatiest forearms in baseball. All right, quick Texans news. C.J. Gardner-Johnson will play on Sunday, it would appear, according to D'Amico Ryans yesterday. Matthew Stafford confirmed on the Rams side, Seth. He will start on Sunday. How are we feeling about Matthew Stafford starting on Sunday?
I feel Matthew Stafford is going to be something to be feared right up until his back seizes up on him. So it's almost like in a bizarre way, I feel a little bit the same way I do about Anthony Richardson, which is that I don't trust that he's going to make it through an entire season. But if I have to play him on that given day, I'm worried about him. And I don't like, now Stafford obviously is a much better quarterback than Anthony Richardson, but it's all or nothing, I think. I think until the first time that his herniated disc flares up, he's probably going to be just fine. And, you know, Davante Adams, I don't have fond memories of Davante Adams from last year when he was with the Jets. Puka Nacua is Puka Nacua. Like, Matt Stafford has a nice arsenal at his disposal. And until his back flares up, I think you got to treat him just like classic Matt Stafford. Now, the nice thing is that you can do something about it. Mm-hmm. You've got a really, really good pass rush here with the Texans that might jostle a vertebrae or two.
Yeah.
What's a single vertebrae?
Vertebra without the E at the end of it? I'm not sure.
Vertebro.
Vertebro.
Let's turn him into the vertebro.
The vertebro.
All right, Stafford? Yeah.
The vertebro.
He's the vertebro.
That's right. For sure they're going to try to get the ball out fast because of what you just said. Like, if he's standing back there, he's going to get his ass kicked on Sunday, I feel like, by Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter. They signed D'Angelo Ross to the practice squad. Jimmy Ward's grand jury hearing is set for today. His attorney very anxious to present Ward's case to the grand jury, so we'll see about that. Kenyon Green re-signed by the Eagles. Jeff Stoutland will not give up on the project that is Kenyon Green.
Yep, that was a nice little. It actually came down on Sunday, I think, when that was announced, or early Monday morning. Yeah, they got, there's upside there with Kenyon Green.
You would think.
If there's one person to get it out. Yeah, like if you look at nothing but Kenyon Green's good plays, you'd say, wow,
yeah,
that guy must be all pro. Like, he's got it in him. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of like when you say, hey, look at Tim Tebow's nice passes. Yeah, like, all right, you gotta factor in the negatives there, too.
Yep. Last night.
Yeah, singular is vertebra.
Vertebra, yeah. That's what I thought, yeah.
So vertebra.
Vertebra. Yeah. We'll put an H on the end of it. TCU 48, North Carolina 14. That's how the Bill Belichick era started. And the final game day with Lee Corso, Seth, the most watched ever at 3.5 million people on a Saturday morning show drawing 3.5 million people. The last 15 minutes peaked at 5.1 million. That's just watching ESPN. You and I talked about they simulcasted it on Fox as well, but just the ESPN feed, 5.1 million yesterday.
They can't tell Lee Corso. They shouldn't give those numbers to Lee Corso. He might just start thinking about a comeback. Or something. You know these athletes when they retire.
Yeah.
It's always, all of a sudden, got to get back into the fray.
Oh, you're saying I'm big box office, eh?
Yeah.
Maybe Fox.
Maybe I'll come back at the right price.
That's right. All right, into the 7 o'clock hour we go. Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, the two head coaches, D'Amico Ryans, Sean McVay. The game is this Sunday. You can hear it on Sports Radio 610, 325. Kick. Texans countdown gets started at 12:25 with me and Seth. D'Amico Ryans on Sean McVay. Sean McVay on D'Amico Ryans. Is this a love fest we've got going on here? We will hear from both head coaches coming up next.